Okay. The first argued case this morning is number 19-12-12, Mirror Advanced Technology against Microsoft Corporation. Mr. Wright.
May it please the court, the board erred because it fundamentally misunderstood the claimed contact list to be nothing more than a simple data structure, and it misunderstood the claimed improvement to that contact list as being nothing more than the simple addition of a memo field to that data structure. That misunderstanding undergirds the obviousness rationale in both Microsoft's petition and in the board's final written decision. If Mira's understanding of the term contact list is correct, and the invention requires the integration of a dynamic memo field into a pre-existing user interface-enabled contact list, then the correct remedy is a remand to the board, so the board can reconsider its obviousness rationale under that correct understanding of the claim. The claims start by calling out a communication device having access to a claimed contact list. That's in the preamble in Claim 1. And the specification explains to a person of ordinary skill in the art what a person of ordinary skill in the art, or how a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood the claimed contact list. And in that regard, if we just turn to the top of column one, it states the very first thing in the specification, it states that a contact list is a common feature, not a common database structure or a common list, but a common feature in modern communication devices. And then the background section proceeds to lay out common features that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood contact lists as of the date of the invention in 2008 as having had. And that includes the ability to enter and save information, to view information in the contact list, to speed dial using the contact list. And then if we turn to the summary of the invention, it talks about specifically about the memo functionality. And it says that a memo is displayed, and this is in column one at line 26. Memo is displayed on a communication device when the corresponding contact list entry is activated, such as when the contact list entry is selected to initiate outgoing communication. That, in the summary of the invention, is a detail or a feature of the contact list that requires some sort of user interface functionality.
It could be that there's no dispute here that somewhere in the patent you do have some sort of interface functionality and therefore an interface. But I think the issue here, what you have to show, is that the contact list itself, that term language, has or establishes some sort of functionality with the user interface.
Right. So I think then if we turn to the claim itself, and in the claim preamble, it says there's a communication device having access to a saved contact list, and then that contact list has contact list entries, and those contact list entries in the preamble are configured to retrieve. So the first contact list entry is configured to retrieve a stored phone number. The second field is configured to retrieve a stored name. And then the memo field, which is really the core limitation of the invention that's integrated into that contact list, is also configured to attach memo data. I think in the parlance of claims in the electrical arts, when a field of like this of a contact list is configured to do something, well, that I think normally implies that there's some sort of code associated with that field for instantiating that particular feature. And then further along in the claim, for example, when you get to activating the first contact list entry and then displaying the memo when that's activated, that again, I think strongly suggests that there is some sort of code, software, that is associated with that contact list entry for instantiating these features. So it is the contact list itself that that has this user interface functionality.
Well, to really repeat, I think, Judge Reyna's question in a different way, it may well be that there is, in the normal use of this device, a communication that's done from a user to the contact list stored data. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the contact list itself has that component as part of what we would refer to as the contact list, does it? That it seems to me is the central question. I'm really just repeating his question, but it's, if you could focus on why it is that you have to have that component as part of the concept of what a contact list is.
I think if we go back to the...
In other words, you could have an address list, and you wouldn't think an address list necessarily comprises a way of adding data to an address list, would you?
No, that's right, and I think this contact list
then
goes...
Why is contact list different from an address list?
Well, I think because when you go back to the patent specification and just start right at the background again, that a contact list is a common feature in most modern communication devices that enable something like speed dialing, that requires user interface functionality.
Where's the evidence? Where can you point us in the record that that's the case here?
Well, I think that's something that a person of ordinary skill in the art in 2008, when they're talking about a contact list on your mobile phone, would understand that you're not talking just about the underlying data structure.
But where is it that a person with ordinary skill would look at in the pen and find that?
Well, I think in the background, I think one place I haven't covered yet is, for example, in Figure 1. The description of Figure 1 in Column 1 at line 37, 38, says Figure 1 shows the database structure of a contact list of the present invention. So that's what Figure 1 shows, and I think, again, this is a fundamental misunderstanding of the board, that shows the underlying database structure in a contact list, but that's not the contact list itself. The contact list is a common feature in most modern communication devices. It's not, and that feature, I think a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood in 2008 to be something more than just a simple list. It's beyond just a Rolodex. It has this user interface enabled functionality as part of the contact list itself. And I think that misunderstanding, that fundamental misunderstanding, undergirded both the petitions and the board's obviousness rationale, because the board viewed the invention as nothing more than the simple addition of a data field, of a memo field to a contact list entry, and it repeatedly characterized at Appendix 50 to 54. The invention is being nothing more than a data storage technique, or a simple design choice between having two storages and having one storage. But it's more complicated than that. This invention fundamentally requires the integration of, and it presumes the existence of a contact list, right? So at the top of column 2, for example, in the patent, it says right off the top, a contact list for a communication device is provided and comprises multiple contact list entries. And then it goes on, you know, to describe the memo feature. So, I mean, that's the fundamental underlying misunderstanding of the board, was that The contact list is nothing but a data structure.
Did you want to address the alternative argument that even if you're right on the construction of contact list, that the Sony prior reference has user interface to the contact list? It's just the only difference being that instead of one list, there are two.
Well, so there's no dispute, I think, that Sony requires some modification.
Right, to go from two to one, I think, is the way the board characterized it.
Right, to the contact list. But that modification and the rationale that sits underneath the motivation to make that modification is that the contact list is nothing but a simple data structure. If, in fact, the contact list is something that is a user a pre-existing user interface enabled entity, well, then the integration of the memo field into that entity, well, the inventor had a very non-intuitive way of enabling this memo function. Sony didn't do it
that.
What
exactly was the non-intuitive way? Because it looked to me like this very short specification just describes this as being a unitary operation, and I didn't see any clever and complex way that they're integrated.
Well, I think that's the main feature of the invention is
well,
that.
Yes, but what is it? What exactly is this clever? What's the novelty, other than simply to describe it as unit a single unit that performs both functions?
Well, what that tight integration of the contact of the memo field into that contact list entry gives you is an inextricably linked memo field. Whereas in the Sony reference and in Matsumoto and in Nielsen, each time the inventors tried to implement the memo functionality, they did it by putting the memo functionality into the separate storage. And when you put it into that separate storage, you have to have some sort of coupling, for one thing, for when the contact list entry is accessed. And then that coupling has to be maintained all the way through the life of the contact list. You know, if you change a phone number or something like that, you have to maintain that coupling. And Sony doesn't maintain that coupling. And that was a non-intuitive way to do it. If it were so intuitive or so simple, I think Microsoft would have found a reference that showed that tight integration.
Thank you.
Okay, let's hear from the other side. You have rebuttal time. Mr. Mason.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Just going first to the last point being discussed with respect to is, you know, what is the bang or what is the true innovation here in using a single integrated data structure. And I don't there isn't one. And I think the patent itself bears this out. If we look at column 2, lines 8 through 12, it describes how you can do it in an integrated fashion, or you could also do it in a linked database fashion. So if this integrated nature of the database was really the crucial aspect of the invention, it would have been described in more than two lines, and it would have been, you know, distinguished from this other alternative, which the patent itself acknowledges as an alternative. So that there that is no real innovation. There's no whiz bang to having things integrated. If there are no further questions at that point, I just want to make three points today. First of all, you know, the board got it right on contact list. I think the court understands the board got it right because a user interface is permitted in this claim, but it's not required by the claimed contact list. I think that's the real issue. The claims bear this out. The specification bears this out. There's no recitation of a user interface, much less a recitation of the user interface associated with this contact list. It's described as a saved contact list or a contact list stored in memory. These claims are carried out by a communication device or by a processor. So there's nothing in the intrinsic evidence that says that the contact list itself has to have a user interface. We're not saying that there can't be some other application that accesses the information in the contact list and that a user could use to interface with the contact list. But those are other applications. And I think that's even borne out in figure four of the patent itself, which Mira has pointed to on numerous occasions. And they characterize that as Gmail, an email application, right? And it's the application that provides the user interface. The contact list is information underlying that application. And similarly, when I another example is when I get a new phone, it says, can we import your contacts, right? That shows that the phone itself has applications and operating system that will use the underlying contact information, but it's importing just that information from elsewhere. Same thing with an application. If I get a new social media application, it says, may we access your contacts? And then I use the user interfaces provided by that application to maybe draft emails or send messages to people. But again, the contact list itself does not require a user interface, and it makes no sense for the contact list to have its own user interface because it's other things on the device that allow users to interface with and use that contact information.
I take it that you would make essentially the same argument with respect to the claim language that refers to the memo field as being configured to attach memo data inputted by the user.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's all under the hood. I mean, I think even opposing counsel characterized that as something that's done by a processor. Maybe there's some code that the processor uses.
But it refers to the user as inputting. Mm-hmm. So at least in the brief, Mara points to that and says, there's your user.
Well, and we're not disputing that there's some kind of user in this claim, right? And we've shown, and the board found, for example, I think in appendix 3940 and 42 to 43, it found how Matsumoto satisfies these other claim elements, right? This memo, this memo data inputted by a user and displayable to show. The board found that Matsumoto showed that. And I think if we also look at what the board found with respect to Matsumoto at, for example, appendix 35, it describes how Matsumoto allows users to input information into the database. So there is a user here, but the presence of this user does not mandate the contact list have a user interface. That's all under the hood. And that kind of touches on the second point, is even assuming arguendo that this new construction had been argued to the board and the board had somehow found some kind of user interface requirement, that the outcome wouldn't have been different. And we know that because the board looked at Matsumoto, and again, this is at appendix 35, for example, and they described how Matsumoto, the table in Matsumoto, that it allows the user to input information regarding a phone call and notifies the user, right? So that's clearly the user interfacing with items that are stored in this contact list. And then later on at appendix 35, in describing Matsumoto's data structure, it said, this includes personal information of a party entered by the user, such as a party's name, telephone number, and email address. So that shows that the board understood Matsumoto as having capability or functionality to interface by which a user could interface with this contact list. And because Mira has not identified any way in which it's construction, we're not sure exactly what user interface means, but they've not identified any way it distinguishes the prior art. That's another ground for affirming the board's construction and its findings of unpatentability. And then third, on I just wanted to address Sony real briefly. Substantial evidence supports the board's determination as to Sony, regardless of how contact list is construed. Mira admits that Sony has this user interface functionality. I've already touched on why, moving from a two data structure embodiment as disclosed in Sony's primary embodiment to a one data structure embodiment as disclosed in Matsumoto or in other parts of Sony would have been, Poseida would have been motivated to do that, and it would have faced no technical hurdles in doing that. It seems Mira's only argument on appeal is that somehow this user interface would have complicated that combination, but there's nothing in the evidence. Even if a user interface were required by the contact list, there's nothing in the evidence establishing that the underlying modification of the underlying data structure would somehow be impacted by a user interface requirement. There's just no evidence there, and Mira does not address Mr. Rasavi's description or the patent's explanation that these are equivalents and a Poseida would have had no issue interchanging them, regardless of the interface requirement.
You've made a motion under rules of appellate procedure 38 for sanctions in this case. What do you think that distinguishes this case dramatically from the great bulk of cases, and I think it's fair to call them a bulk now, coming from the PTO and IPR cases, in which by a substantial margin we affirm, often without opinion. How is this case different from many of those?
Yes, yeah, and I'm aware of the many cases. I think here, just because you can appeal doesn't mean you should. And I mean, we very carefully considered the sanction motion, did not bring it lightly. But here, this was a situation. There was just no non-frivolous argument for overturning the board's rejection of this 150-word claim construction.
Well, I guess
that Mira proposed.
I tend to find sometimes that the question of whether something is frivolous or not is much harder than the question of whether it's a prevailing winning argument. How am I to distinguish this case? What is it about this case that stands out from other cases in which we affirm, perhaps pretty readily, without discussion?
I think what distinguishes this case is that the claim construction that was argued to the board was not grounded in any supporting evidence. Over 150 words, it forced the board to issue it was over 20 pages dealing with this claim construction, and there was no basis for that claim construction for importing
that
150 words into the context.
It's a problem that was peculiar to the board, not to the appeal. The appeal has been brought by narrowing the claim construction considerably. So that isn't something that I would think is a fair basis for saying, well, the appeal is invalid.
I think that's where, if they had stuck with that 150-word construction on appeal, it would have been equally frivolous. But I think by changing the scope of that claim construction on appeal, it deprived the board of the opportunity and wasted resources, deprived the board of the opportunity to consider that construction. I think before the board, for example, at Appendix 30 and Appendix 40, the board was forced to consider these other aspects of that 150-word construction. And Mira's primary arguments as to patentability related to this common and readily available nature of the claim construction.
But again, seems to me to focus on a problem that was presented to the board, not a problem that's presented to us on appeal.
Where it becomes a problem on appeal is because even if Mira's new construction were right, it were not argued to the board, and it would not change the outcome. I think that's
okay.
And if the court has no further questions, I will see the remainder of my time.
Any more questions?
Thank you,
Mr. Lacy. Mr. Wright?
May it please the court, I just have four very quick points. First, innovation doesn't have to be something that's super complicated or super sophisticated. It just has to be something that's new. And Microsoft put forth no art that had this tightly integrated memo functionality into a contact list. Second, the fact that the processor is in the claims is what is interfacing with the contact list, I don't think detracts from the fact that the contact list must have a user interface. Of course, the processor ultimately is always what is going to interface with the contact list. Third, I don't think we can say that the outcome would not have been different either under a different claim construction, under Mira's claim construction. Matsumoto's table 200 itself is a pure data structure, and there is no user interface functionality attributed to Matsumoto's table 200. And with respect to Sony, again, in the Sony grounds, the central thesis underlying the board's motivation to modify Sony centers on its belief that the contact list is nothing more than a simple data structure. And finally, I think that with respect to Rule 38, it would be a substantial departure from this court's Rule 38 jurisprudence. This was a and is a mine run appeal that centers on claim construction. And with respect to the claim construction issue, it crystallized around either the contact list requires a user interface or it doesn't require a user interface. That's the way the board presented it in its final written decision, and that is the particular issue that Mira raised on appeal.
If you were to write an opinion that tried to distinguish between the what you call the mine run of appeals versus an appeal in which Rule 38 was appropriate, and you wanted to characterize the difference in as succinct a way as you could, what would that sentence say?
I think that the cases where Rule 38 is appropriate have something beyond this case, like misstating the record or appealing an issue that has already been decided below, or some persistent course of misconduct or something that is in almost every, I think every Rule 38 case that this court has decided, and there's been no allegation
of anything here. Not simply substantive weakness of the appeal.
No, that would be a substantial departure from, I think, the Sparks case.
Okay.
Any more questions for Mr. Wright?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you
both. The case is taken under submission.